Thank you. Please proceed.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Megan Waples here on behalf of plaintiff's petitioners. The fundamental question in this case is whether the legislature, when it enacted the Uninsured Motorist Act, intended to give every individual buying liability coverage the right to choose to protect themselves and their families to the same extent that they were protecting others, or did it intend to allow insurance companies to choose when to offer or not to offer the UM coverage based on how they package or bundle or what type of policy they decide to offer the liability coverage in. In this case, Mr. Carlton was specifically seeking out coverage to protect himself and his family, additional amounts of coverage, once his eldest child began driving. The agent recommended an umbrella policy for that purpose. But because Allstate's belief is that because it's an umbrella policy and it contains other types of coverage, it doesn't fall under the UM statute, there was no UM coverage available with that policy, and Mr. Carlton never received the offer or the explanation that would have allowed him to make an informed decision about whether to buy the UM coverage that would have protected his family more completely as he intended. Now, Allstate says that its position is correct because the statute doesn't specifically mention umbrella policies, and because umbrella policies aren't part of the statutory scheme, they're not regulated or required. And so therefore it suggests, and the Court of Appeals agreed, that the legislature really only meant for the statute to apply to policies that were issued to contain the compulsory coverage. But that's not what the statute says. The legislature did not use the phrase complying policy, which is the phrase that it had defined to mean a policy issued to comply with the compulsory coverage requirements of Part 6. Instead, the legislature used the phrase automobile liability policy, a phrase that is defined in a statute to which the Uninsured Motorist Act explicitly refers to mean any policy containing liability insurance in particular amounts. And this court has consistently held that when the legislature has a choice of phrases, when it's using two different terms differently throughout the statutes, its choice to use one phrase instead of another must be given effect. And in this case, the legislature chose to use a phrase that it had previously defined very broadly in order to cast a broad net.
So, counsel, can I get your argument, but I'm hoping you can tie it with the exact language or cite us to the statutory provisions. I mean, for example, can you help us with the definition of policy that directs us to automobile insurance policy, or automobile liability policy, isn't it automobile insurance policy?
The statute,
and it uses the word automobile. I guess that's the part I'm more concerned about.
I understand. There are several different types of policies that are defined in the statute. Section 10.609, the language of that statute is automobile liability or motor vehicle liability policy. Automobile liability policy and motor vehicle liability policy are both terms that are defined in the Motor Vehicle Financial Responsibility Act. Automobile liability policy is defined in that statute very broadly, as I said, basically meaning any policy that contains automobile liability coverage in a particular amount. Motor vehicle liability policy is defined much more narrowly in the Motor Vehicle Financial Responsibility Act. It has requirements that the policy designate particular vehicles. It has other requirements concerning when the policy has to be primary relative to other policies. And those two terms are used very differently in the Motor Vehicle Financial Responsibility Act. Motor vehicle liability policies are required at certain times to show that a particular vehicle has been insured if it's been in an accident multiple times. Automobile liability policy is used fairly sparingly in the Motor Vehicle Financial Responsibility Act. It's never required or regulated. There are no provisions requiring, you know, that it be primary or that it designate vehicles. And the only purpose that it serves is that when a person has been in an accident, they can use their automobile liability policy to address a requirement to show proof of financial responsibility for the future. And so the
So let me just make positive. When you say automobile liability policy, the statute actually says automobile insurance policy. We're talking about the same thing, right?
I believe the statute
10-4-601 paren 2 policy means that
10-4-601 has a different definition of policy.
Okay, I thought that's where you were.
I'm sorry. I apologize. I'm in 10-4-609, which is the UMA, which states that no automobile liability or motor vehicle liability policy insuring against loss resulting from liability related from the use of the use of an automobile shall be issued without the uninsured motorist coverage.
So that's the part, though, that we're confused about, the 10-4-601-2. What that actually uses the automobile insurance policy language. And can you help me? What? That just doesn't matter, I guess.
It's one of those issues. 10-4-601 was originally part of the Cancellation Act, which was passed 4 years after the Uninsured Motorist Act was passed. And so in Passamano, this court went through a pretty detailed evaluation of that statutory history and found that the definition of policy that was codified in 10-4-601-2 does not apply to 10-4-609 because it was only an accident of recodification that caused the Uninsured Motorist Act to be codified in the same part as the Cancellation Act, and that did not reflect a legislative intent to narrow the scope of the Uninsured Motorist Statute. And so the definition of policy in 10-4-601 can't be used to limit the reach of 10-4-609. And instead, the question is, what is the phrase actually used in the 10-4-609 automobile liability or motor vehicle liability policy mean as the legislature drafted the statute at that time?
And I guess your argument is that it doesn't matter what, you don't have to use the magic words automobile policy for it to be an automobile policy.
Correct. The labels that insurers use on their products vary quite widely. And in this case, we have a personal umbrella policy, and I think the underlying policy was called a personal automobile policy.
But isn't that a norm of the insurance industry? I mean, I guess I understand you saying it doesn't matter what you call it, from your argument, but isn't that the norm of the way the insurance world works, is that they divide between personal umbrella policies and automobile policies?
I don't think that's accurate for a number of reasons. First, the labels do vary quite a bit. If you look at even just the cases that are cited, the labels of the policies vary quite a bit. But I think more importantly, Allstate and the Court of Appeals and other courts have said, well, umbrella policies are just different. They're just a different type of policy. But in reality, looking at the coverage from the perspective of the individual buying it, they're not different. They provide the same type of coverage. Mr. Carlton wanted protection now that his child was driving, and he got liability protection in the form of an umbrella policy. To an insured, it's irrelevant whether it comes in an umbrella policy, whether it's packaged with aircraft coverage or towing coverage. What they're getting is liability coverage, and this court has always held that both contracts of insurance and the statutory requirements are to be interpreted based on the way an average insured would understand them.
And I guess your position is that when you're buying an umbrella policy, you're thinking you're covering everything in your whole life, including motor vehicle.
It would depend, obviously, on the insured, but certainly in this case, and yeah. I think, in McMichael's, one of the points that this court made was that part of the point of the statute is to protect insurers who are, as the court put it, unschooled in the vagaries of insurance contracts, and who may be misled into believing they've purchased coverage when in fact they haven't, if this offer is not made. And I think that was reiterated again in Parfrey, when the court held that the offer had to be reasonably calculated to allow an informed decision. And looking at these decades of history of this statute and this court's interpretation of the statute, the function of the statute really is to tie the two coverages together so that when someone goes in seeking coverage, they don't just get an offer of the liability coverage, which really is a pretty narrow form of protection as far as the insured is concerned. It protects their assets, but it doesn't protect them or their families in the event that they're the ones who are catastrophically injured. And so the purpose of the statute has been to tie the coverages together for the purpose of an offer. And this also goes to the issue of what's the public policy behind the statute. Allstate and the Court of Appeals have said, well, it's a minimum recovery system. It's only meant to ensure that people can get those minimum amounts required by the Motor Vehicle Financial Responsibility Act. But that is directly contrary to the purpose, to the function of the statute, the way it's set up, and the language. If that were the only purpose of the statute, there would be no requirement for a higher offer of coverage, and there would be no requirement for an offer of underinsured coverage, the sole function of which is to prevent someone from being limited to the minimum amounts that someone else might decide to carry. This statute is designed to allow insurers to choose to protect their families to the level of their choosing, rather than being limited to what some other person might decide to carry or what the legislature may choose to require of other individuals. And so that's why it makes sense to tie, as is suggested by the plain language, the offer requirement to any time the policy that's being sold contains liability coverage, rather than trying to substitute the meaning of complying policy or motor vehicle, you know, narrowing it just to policies that are motor vehicle liability policies, but instead to use that broad definition that was passed as part of the Motor Vehicle Financial Responsibility Act.
Could I ask a question about the policy itself? It seems to suggest in the policy itself that the policy provides only excess insurance. It does not contribute with any required underlining insurance, with that required underlying insurance capitalized. What does that mean exactly? And doesn't that work against your position?
No, Your Honor, because the coverage that's being provided is still liability coverage. The underlying insurance requirement, I mean, this is essentially why umbrella policies can be cheaper, is because the vast majority of risks are going to fall within the underlying insurance. But once the damages exceed that underlying insurance requirement, then it's providing liability coverage of the exact same type as what's provided in the underlying coverage.
Well, I wanted to make sure I understood that, because it seems to suggest that this excess insurance, this umbrella policy, would only be in effect if there was the right kind of insurance in place upon which it was based. For example, the liability exposure, which was necessary for an automobile, was $100,000, $300,000,
etc. That's
correct. But I'm sorry.
No, my apologies.
Thank you. So my question is why would one who was buying this assume, well, I have this insurance in effect, mm-hmm. and this includes UM, UIM, why would one assume that this excess insurance, this umbrella policy, would add something more other than just the coverage that it states it does, that it would increase the UM, UIM in coverage? I'm not saying that very well, but perhaps you can sort that out for me.
Is your question essentially going to the idea, was Mr. Carlton confused as to whether he had actually bought UM coverage?
Right.
I think
he already had it. He was required to have it, the way I'm reading this contract, right?
He was required to have underlying limits of liability coverage.
Right.
He was not required to have underlying limits of UM coverage. The way the umbrella policy is set up is there's the general grant of coverage saying we pay when you
have the required statutory insurance.
It says you have to have the underlying limits of these particular coverages, and
okay.
It lists liability as one of the coverages for which there's an underlying insurance requirement of 100, 300. So there's no question that the umbrella policy restricts the coverage to only come into effect if that underlying insurance has been exhausted, essentially. But that doesn't change the nature of the coverage. And in fact, the compulsory coverage that's required by Part 6 can also, at times, be written on an excess basis, depending on who's driving the car and what policies are in play. And that, in fact, has been upheld by the Court of Appeals, saying, no, that compulsory coverage, even that basic liability coverage, doesn't have to be written on a primary basis at all times. And so the fact that this coverage only comes into play over a certain amount doesn't change the fact that it's automobile liability coverage. If I may, I'd like to reserve the rest of my time.
Sure. Thank you. May it please the court.
My name is Peter Valletta, and I'm here with my co-counsel, John Vaught. We represent respondent Allstate Insurance Company. The Court of Appeals and the trial court were correct and should be affirmed. They correctly held that Colorado statutes do not require that uninsured motorist coverage be included in excess personal liability policies. This case is not about whether the Carltons received the insurance coverage that they purchased or the benefits from that coverage. They received those in full. And this case is not about maximizing the Carltons' coverage under their personal umbrella policy. It's about trying to graft together a new and different highly regulated non-liability coverage into a liability policy.
Could you explain why you use that term, non-liability?
Yes. The uninsured motorist coverage, which plaintiffs are seeking to have added to this policy, is a coverage that protects you as the insured in the event you're injured by someone else when they're using a vehicle.
That's part of what I think the average insured thinks of as protection for themselves.
That's correct. And that's
for our liability.
That's what the uninsured motorist coverage does. So it's a non-liability coverage. It's a first-party coverage. It pays you if you're hurt, as opposed to a liability coverage. A liability coverage pays someone else. If I cause an injury to a third party, my insurance pays them instead of me having to pay them. And that's why I make this distinction, because they are two completely different types of insurance. And to try and graft them together does not make sense. And this case is not about public policy, really, either, because the statutory language...
Wait a minute. I mean, that's... I don't understand that argument, because that's precisely what the statute does, you would concede, for, and I don't know what it uses nomenclature, but a traditional automobile liability policy, which covers liability, and the statute requires that it also cover the UM, which is non-liability.
That's correct. The reason I say it's not about public policy is because a personal umbrella policy, a personal liability policy, is not a policy that's regulated by Colorado statutes. As the Court of Appeals recognized, there is no statutory requirement imposed upon any personal liability policy. It's imposed upon automobile liability policies. And that's why that distinction becomes critical. As I said, the liability coverage covers your liability to others. It does not pay you for anything. It pays third parties. And in fact, if you look at the umbrella policy here, it makes that very clear. It expressly excludes any payments under that policy to the insured.
Show us where it says that, if you have that in front of you, please.
I cite the record on page 3 of our brief, but that's in...
I see the exclusions on page 5.
It's exclusion number 3.
I don't understand why that's significant, because obviously that matters and excludes any payment. If the statutory requirement of covering UM is inapplicable, as you argue. However, obviously the provision is void if in fact the statute requires the carrying of UM. So it doesn't seem to me this thing turns on that at all, on whether you have that exclusion of any payment direct.
It doesn't turn on that directly, but I point to that to emphasize the completely different nature of these two different coverages we're talking about. And that the umbrella.
But that's why I mentioned to you before. That seems to me doesn't matter either, because in your automobile liability policy, you have these completely two different coverages, liability and UM. You have the UM because the statute requires it.
And that the reason I make that distinction is because the only reason that the automobile policy includes the UM coverage is because the legislature said explicitly, we want that coverage to be included in automobile policies.
Which gets us to the issue, which is, and does that include an umbrella policy?
And I think that exploring the nature of a personal liability policy in more detail helps to understand why it's not an automobile policy. It includes liability coverage for a wide range of things, and it's focused on the person. It's not focused on a vehicle. It's not focused on a specific location. It's focused on your personal activities. It covers you anywhere, in your home, in your apartment, while you're occupying any vehicle, not just a motor vehicle, by the way, any land vehicle, you know, an ATV, something, anything else, or a boat, or an aircraft. It also covers liability for civic services that you perform. It covers liability for things other than your conventional bodily injury and property damage you might think of, like false imprisonment, wrongful entry, invasion of rights of occupancy.
Could I interrupt?
Yes.
So if I wanted to get additional UM insurance, would Allstate sell me that and call this excess UM insurance?
I do not believe, and it's not in the record, but I do not believe that there is a separate excess UM product sold by Allstate. I do believe that some insurers do sell such product, but I don't know that for a fact. But I would submit that that's a question of the marketplace. Different companies market different products. They sell different things to different consumers. And in an unregulated area, when you're talking about personal liability policies, again, there's no statute or regulation that tells an insurer that it must offer those or tells them the form that it must be. Therefore, I find it difficult to jump to the next step and say, you have to add something to that product if you sell it.
I understand that the issue having to do with what the agent said to the insured is not before us. But isn't it, it seems that kind of the, there's a train of thought here that perhaps the insured was under the impression that by buying this umbrella policy, that's in fact what he was accomplishing. That irrespective of what happened when his child was driving, he had increased coverage. And you're saying that that's just a false impression.
I don't believe that impression can be sustained from the record. The only thing that says that's in the record is a statement, and may not quote it exactly, but basically he wanted to protect himself and his children. There's nothing in the record about protect them from what? Protect them from the liability they may cause. I mean, you're talking about teenage drivers and the injuries that they can cause to other people if they're in accidents, or you're talking about coverage for yourself. I mean, there's no question. And I believe if you went down that line, you would find there were discussions about, well, what health insurance do you have? I mean, it was more complicated than that, but there's nothing in the record that indicates there was a specific inquiry about what was in the umbrella policy or for what purpose it was going to be there, other than the general concept of it would provide some protection to him and his family.
So I want to get you back to a point that I guess is maybe just still bugging me, which is the nature of UM versus the nature of an automobile liability policy, what I think you would call an automobile liability policy, which is regulated. The comparison you're making doesn't seem to make any difference to me, and I guess I'd like you to explain to me if I'm missing something. That is, yes, a UM policy, excuse me, a umbrella policy also covers all the other things that you mentioned. But an automobile liability policy does the same thing, not the same coverage, but also covers many things other than automobile liability. It covers UM because it's required to. It may provide protection for a broken windshield. It provides collision coverage. None of these things are automobile liability protection. And so in that respect, the two policies are actually very much alike in that each of them cover a great many things, including automobile liability coverage.
Two responses to that. First, the additional coverages in an auto policy, set aside the liability and the UM for a moment, those additional coverages, they all go to property damage and other aspects of the vehicle itself. They are tied to the automobile. They don't go beyond.
Well, they actually do go beyond the automobile, and because they cover the owner in other circumstances too, don't they?
They only cover the owner with regard to liability pertaining to use of that vehicle.
What about use of other vehicles?
Well, or use of another vehicle. Yes, in certain instances that could be.
It actually goes beyond the owner.
Secondary coverage. That's correct.
Probably to the insured, which probably includes family members.
There is a coverage that extends to family members. But they're all tied to uses of automobiles. The broader picture, though, to answer your question, is that automobile insurance related to the automobile, has been a general area of regulation that the legislature stepped forward and said, okay, we want people to be insured when they're operating these vehicles on our highways. We want you to have liability coverage. And then they said, well, not everybody's buying that, so we want to make sure people have a way to get compensation for the injuries we know are going to happen, so we're going to make you at least have the chance to buy UM coverage. And my point is it's an entire regulatory scheme that's focused on the use of an automobile and its implications for society, as opposed to a personal liability policy is an individual optional choice to step out and say, you know what, if I have a dog that bites somebody, if somebody slips and falls on my property, if I'm at a condo meeting and I call somebody a name, I'm protected for personal liability and a whole range of things, some of which may or may not relate to an automobile, but it's a wider, broader range, and it's an unregulated area. And therefore, to me, the concept of why the legislature adds UM to auto policies, there's a connection and a reason within a whole regulatory statutory framework. That logic does not transfer over to the personal liability policy because it's a personal option situation. And that's why I see that distinction.
So if I may interrupt you, I'm a little confused about looking at the phrase automobile liability policy as it appears in 10.4609 and the cross-reference both within Title 10 to policy versus a definition of automobile liability policy in 427.103. In 427.103 refers to a liability policy. It seems to be a broader definition and perhaps within Title 10. Can you explain where should we be looking to define this otherwise undefined term, automobile liability policy?
First, let me take the individual pieces and then I'll have a broader answer. The definition in 427.103. Thank you. That definition, while it uses the term liability policy, it's talking about, in context, it's talking about a complying policy that fits within all the regulatory requirements for motor vehicle responsibility law. So that definition is tied inherently to motor vehicles. The Section 601 and 609 definitions, that whole Part 6 definition is set up by Section 601. And even though there was a fortuity of codification, the argument that we're hearing about why you should or should not apply it, the fact is that it says this definition applies to the whole section. And therefore, when you add those definitions together, again, you're talking about a motor vehicle liability policy, and none of them regulate personal liability beyond the automobile realm. And that's
because you would define just conceptually a personal umbrella policy as something conceptually different from an automobile liability policy, and we would urge us not to look at the nature of the coverage.
That's correct, because okay. the coverage is far broader than that, and it is inherently different from what you're trying to graft on. You're trying to add on something that's unrelated to the personal liability policy and the coverages that it provides. You are adding on a first-party coverage that it's an animal of a different nature, so to speak. And so you're really reaching a stretch. So the question is, how do we justify this? I mean, it's not clear from the language, at the very least. I would say it's not in the language at all. And if it's not in the language at all, you don't even get to public policy because you apply the plain language of the statute. But if you consider public policy for a moment, you look at the structure of Section 609. You've seen the briefs and you've heard the arguments about minimum recovery versus full recovery. The concept that the courts across the country have looked at is they've said, where a statute says you must include UM at maximum limits unless you make other choices, courts have said that's a full recovery system. The Colorado's and what's called the limitum or minimum recovery system says you must include minimum amounts, but you have options to buy more. And courts have said that's at least this year we can look at that the legislature in the full recovery situation is looking to require as much as possible. Whereas in the minimum or limited recovery situation, the fact that you must offer only minimum FR amounts and offer the opportunity to buy more creates the permissive, the lesser standard, and doesn't give a justification for the full expansion. In closing, Section 609 was satisfied when the opportunity to purchase UM at the statutory limits was offered, and Mr. Carlton purchased that. The statutory language does not require UM in Lombardi liability policies. An expansion of the statute would be manifestly unfair. It should be done legislatively to give insurers a chance to do policy forms, calculate exposures, and do all of the work necessary to provide a coverage if they're going to be required to do that. We would ask that the court be affirmed.
Thank you, Ms. Flanna. Not over, Ms. Waples.
Thank you. I would like to try to very quickly clarify a couple of points. First, in response to Justice Rice's questions, there's no question that the types of coverage are different, and there's no question that the umbrella policy in this case does not include UM coverage. And the basis of the argument here isn't whether Mr. Carlton thought he purchased it, but whether Allstate violated the statute by failing to offer it when it also offered liability coverage. And counsel's argument that automobile liability policies and complying policies are the same, or that automobile liability policies, that phrase is what is regulated, is incorrect. Automobile liability policies are not regulated. That is not a phrase that is used to ever be required to be offered. Those are not policies that are required to be procured. They're simply a policy that contains liability insurance that can be used to show that the owner of a vehicle has a financial responsibility for the future. And finally, with regard to the minimum recovery dichotomy, I would like to point out that the definition that counsel just gave for minimum recovery is that you have to include minimum amounts and then you have the option to buy higher levels of coverage. That is precisely the design of the statute that has been found to be full recovery in multiple states. And that is why that distinction is not a reliable or accurate or even a justifiable way to interpret this statute to not have the requirements that it actually has. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Case will stand submitted.